Microphones are live.
Good morning and welcome to the April 23rd edition of the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors meeting. I ask you to please rise and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Anybody that needs a hearing device, you can check with a clerk. She has them here. Ask for all the speaker slips for consent agenda items to be turned in, and we'll go on to public comment on the consent. Madam Clerk, are there any changes to the agenda?
Yes, you have one change. Added item on closed session under pending litigation, legal counsel existing litigation number 7, concern landowners in the Paso Robles groundwater basin versus the County of San Luis Obispo. Number 8, Coast National Bank versus the County of San Luis Obispo. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the.
Richard Margetson, I'm talking about item 18 on your consent calendar. I'm a little disappointed this is on consent calendar. This is two contracts for recycled water in Los Osos again. Just to show how ridiculous this is, if you've read the contract, which I hope you all have, the project and Los Osos is paying for the entire infrastructure to deliver this water to these two pieces of farmland. 10 acres to acre feet a year to one, 5 to the other, at a cost to the property owner of $100 an acre foot. This contract's for 10 years. The one property owner will reimburse the project and the county $10,000 over the span of this contract. The other property owner, $5,000. There's not one bit of analysis in the staff report of how much it's costing to run those lines out to those farms, which are across the street on Los Osos Valley Road from the treatment plant. $15,000. Does anybody even remotely think that's going to cover the cost of running the infrastructure to the line, putting in the meter, and then delivering the water for the next 10 years to those properties? And what's going to happen when I'm done, or it won't happen, is Mr. Gibson's going to call someone up from staff and they're going to say it's a condition of the wastewater project and we have no choice. When is somebody going to say that this plan has problems and ask the Coastal Commission to look at this issue again and reduce the 10% threshold for water going to the ag properties? When is somebody going to do that? This is a complete waste of money. And the one thing that does not come out of this is there's not one bit of mitigation for seawater intrusion. The seawater intrusion mitigation factor for all of that area out there that's getting recycled water is zero. Zero. This will be the second and third contracts that you're approving. 65 acre feet of water that will have no impact, none, on seawater intrusion. None. And you're doing nothing about it. Nothing. This is consent calendar.
Thank you,
should have been
Margaret.
A hearing item.
Ben DeFada, followed by Jeff Edwards and Mike Brown.
This is on item 18. Good morning. I am Ben DeFada from Los Osos. What in the world is Gibson doing to the economically depressed zone people of Los Osos? As we stand here before you this morning, we are rip-roaring mad that something is very wrong here in this room. I.e., like you all are hard of hearing. As you think that selling this community's perfectly good reclaimed water at a big loss to farmers outside of our aquifer is good practice, It looks like more like malpractice to us that have to make up the difference. Ask him who's paying for the pipes to this farmer. Ask him how come you're giving away this good water at a loss. Ask him, is it his intention to hook Los Angeles, Los Osos up to the expensive Lake Nacimiento $40 million water system that we have to pay for? Ask him why is he giving away our only drinking water to the farmers for cheap? We want answers from his lips today. We would like you other supervisors to ask him the above questions, but beware he will talk you to death till he gets his way. This is your fiduciary duty to the people of Los Osos and this county. So let's take this seriously as if it was money coming out of your pockets. Come to think of it, your administrator and council should be asking him the same questions. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr.
144 seconds.
Okay, thank you. We'll put that on your account. Jeff Edwards, followed by Mike Brown and Julie Tacker.
Thank you, Mr. Teixeira. Good morning, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards. I'm a longtime resident of Los Osos, and I, too, have concerns about your consent item number 18 today, which, as you've heard, is the execution of two more contracts in the so-called water recycling program. And unfortunately, as you know, the backdrop in Los Osos is seawater intrusion, and the test in each of these instances should be whether or not these contracts are doing anything for seawater intrusion, and I have to suggest to you they're not. That's what we have today. The cemetery is right next door to the treatment plant. Are they taking a drop of this recycled water for their tens of, like 20 to 30 acres of turf? Is the turf farm, San Luis Sod and Soils, are they taking any? They have about 12 to 15 acres of turf. Right at the end of Blue Heron Lane, they're not taking a drop. You have to ask yourself, why aren't they? This is also tied into the interlocutory stipulated judgment, the ISJ as you know it, or we call it in Los Osos the IS joke. There's a suggestion in the staff report that the purveyors, Golden State and LOCSD, they're okay with this because the water's being delivered outside of their service area. Well, I have to tell you, they're not okay with it. That's water that needs to be returned to the basin so that we can use it some other time. Again, the real agricultural interests are not participating in this, not even the cemetery. So what's the solution? Don't deliver water to dryland farmers or properties that don't have their own water. That's the whole idea. We want to offset their usage with this recycled water. This isn't doing it. These should be pulled from consent, either discussed separately or brought back. This is a fraud being perpetuated on Los Osos and the USDA. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Mike Brown, followed by Julie Tacker, and my last request to speak this morning is Lindy Owen.
Mike Brown, representing CoLab. Item 20 is a contract with a company called Intelligy to teach the county how to operate a call center, which is necessitated by the complexities of the Affordable Health Care Act, or Obamacare. And this is probably a red flag. You're going to be seeing a lot of things because this is so complicated. In this case, it's so complicated that the potential patients and clients who are going to perhaps benefit are going to need to call a county call center in order to figure out what part of the program they should apply for or be in. But what's the real interesting thing about this is Intelligy's real successful. It's been in this business. Its CEO, Vail Dudo, wrote in a business magazine article that Intelligy can now offer clients use of a 400-seat call center in New Delhi at a billable rate of $18 per Indian worker versus $30 to $35 for their U.S. counterparts. It's really just too expensive to do business here in the U.S., particularly from a customer support standpoint, Dudo says. The cost benefits go beyond wages alone. Dudo says turnover at U.S. call centers can run 100% and absenteeism can reach 14%. But those drop drastically in India, partly because in India, prestige may play a role. Dudo says that while call center jobs in the U.S. might be on a par with fast food work, in India they're equivalent to an accountant or a computer programmer. All employees at the Intelligy Technologies facility in New Delhi have a college degree. So now you're going to train 50 or so eligibility workers to become call center people. I don't know what that switch means. Are you overstaffed now so they can be freed up to do this, or are they going to rotate or whatever? But you ought to take Dudo's advice, her free advice, which is look at contracting this out. Instead of spending this money to build a call center and then to operate one on a permanent basis, what's that going to cost? Now, staff may say, oh, it's offset by federal or state money, but it's still all our tax money, or money that people in good health plans are going to be taxed to help support this.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Julie Tacker, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good morning. I am Julie Tacker. I also live in Los Osos and would like to speak to item 18. This is a gift of public funds. Absolutely. The Los Osos ratepayer is paying to design, engineer, construct, and operate tertiary treatment of this water through that plant to then be delivered on an ongoing basis for a mere $100 an acre foot. It will cost us in excess of $4,000 an acre foot to produce this water. $3,900 given away with every acre foot, on the order of $250,000 a year for these three contracts. Bring into it today, is there's no explanation and no good reason for it. It can all wait until the questions are answered. You are giving away water, which is the equivalent of giving away money. And in fact, you are giving away the public funds, but they're Los Osos funds. We're accustomed to that. We can do that to a disadvantaged community over and over again.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Lindy Owen is my final request to speak this morning.
Good morning, Lindy Owen from Los Osos. Also speaking on this item, the question is, if people just want a simple way of looking at this, we have 1 million gallons of treated water that will be coming from the treatment plant every single day, and that 1 million gallons of water that we pay to treat needs to be put back into our aquifer and into a drinking supply, because the county has mismanaged our basin for so many years that we are now in saltwater intrusion, level 3 severity, and possibly losing our upper aquifer too. So it is a water crisis in Los Osos. It's not about the wastewater per se. It's about the full cycle of reusing that water in an intelligent fashion. To date, we have very few guaranteed contracts of where to put this water, because the county has put that on a back burner. We do have a couple more years, but to make contracts with farmers who do not use water now or who use very little of the basin water does not offset the use of that treasured water that we're losing by giving them treated water. It just gives them an opportunity to buy the cheapest water in the entire state of California, it appears. Our school district was forced to enter into contracts to take the recycled water. $1,500 to $1,800 for 1 acre foot. This dry land farmer, the second dry land farmer now, $100 per acre feet. Our children, our schools are forced to pay full treatment costs, whereas we're giving it away to farmers at 100 acres a feet. They can start up new industries now. Geez, with that kind of money, I mean, cheap water, who wouldn't start growing stuff? You can just, I mean, and it's these contracts, they can also turn around and walk away from them. It's very important to question why the major farmers, the cemetery, are not taking this water. Please help us. save our groundwater. Do not let Paavo and, Mr. Paavo Ogren and Mr. Gibson continue with this no solution at the end. We're going to be taking out 8 million gallons of the high groundwater area when they put the pipes in there. There's no place for that to be put it currently. That's a 3-year supply if it gets put in the bay. Please do not let this happen. I just wanted to say I think that Mr. Ogren and Mr. Gibson together must be writing the book about how to destroy a water basin, a corporate dream of good old boy business. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. That was my final request to speak this morning. Seeing no more, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the board. Comments or items you'd like to pull, starting to my right with Mr. Meacham.
Item 10 and 18.
Okay. Ms. Arnold.
I just have a couple of comments, and I did want to give a shout-out.
Just give me your list now.
Oh, 2 and 18.
Okay. Got it. Thank you. Supervisor Hill.
None, thank you, sir.
Okay. Supervisor Gibson.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a brief comment on 18.
Very good, sir. Thank you. Starting with Ms. Arnold on item number 2.
Sorry, I need item number 3.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I wanted to give a shout-out. I have a request to reappoint John DeCoux and Mark Jensen as the District 5 representatives to the Fish and Game Fines Committee, and they have served on this committee through several supervisors' reigns, and I really wanted to thank them for their service. They're not here today, but hopefully they're listening to this, and they'll know how much I think we all of supervisors along the line have appreciated their service.
Okay.
And on 18, I listened to the comments of the folks that are concerned in Los Osos, and the board here has asked for an update on the project, and I expect we'll be getting one very soon, so that'll be a time that we can address these questions, hopefully, and they all have a chance, too, to ask questions.
Supervisor Meacham, item number 10.
Yes, if I could, please. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 3 of, on page 3 of 5, when we talk about the 30-year operational cost summary, there's a couple of comments in the staff report. One says the 30-year projections do not include costs for the bid alternates included in the design, which may add square footage or may reduce utility costs. And if we jump down to the very bottom, the little asterisk there, it says cost offsets of $660,144 for group homes reduces annual fiscal impact from 760.
Completed, we'll be able to run a 15-bed treatment facility with inside the juvenile hall and transfer the youth that are currently placed out of county into the juvenile hall to be treated there, thus saving that $660,000.
So if we weren't doing that, Jim, then apparently total costs would add up to an additional $660,000 if we weren't doing this.
Correct. We would have the $660,000 plus the $768,000. That's correct.
I guess it's not much if we say it fast. A lot of money. Okay.
It is a lot of money.
Let me add, if I may, Supervisor Meacham,
to your comment about the overall financial plan. As we've been working through the women's jail and the juvenile hall expansion, staffing costs are something that we've been acutely aware of and have been tracking very closely and have been forecasted as part of our budget projections going forward and into our 5-year plan. You know, the good news from this is, as Mr. Salvio noted, of the roughly $750,000 increase, nearly all but $100,000 of that cost would be offset. At least that's the plan from savings from the group home. On the women's jail side of the equation, if off the top of my head, I think increased staffing is in the neighborhood of $1.5 million, give or take a bit. Part of that will be offset, or most of it, with AB 109 funding that's come in that we're using to help with the modulars that are being used to deal with the overcrowding. So those issues have been noted. We've been tracking them, and we're doing what we can to offset those with other funding sources.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Now on 18, I just have one question, if I could. On page 2 of 3, when it talks about the contracts that they've arranged for the 50-acre feet for $100 an acre foot, that says staff is still in negotiations with 3 remaining program participants. Are these 3 remaining the same price, $100 per acre foot, or is this cost different?
No,
Mr. Meacham, Mr. Diodati's here. I imagine that's still part of the negotiation, but we'll see what he.
And I'm just wondering, what range are we looking at here, dollar-wise, from an acre-foot standpoint, John?
Thank you, John Diodati with the Public Works Department. The other three program participants are in the same area, utilizing substantially the same type of agricultural uses, so pricing will be pretty much the same.
I'll take a bunch of that at $100 an acre foot.
Thank you. That's it.
Okay. Well, good. Public comments done for right now. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I would just follow up on that. First, for Supervisor Arnold's and the board's benefit, I talked to staff yesterday, and time's been reserved on our June 18th meeting for an update and some action items on the Los Osos wastewater project. The issues that you heard our usual commenters raise today, Supervisor, have been raised a number of times before, most recently in the last time a contract came. This particular delivery of water is part of the disposal plan for the wastewater, and it is a cost of the project, and it is a project condition, as one commenter pointed out. So that's the reality of this part of it. There's a lot more, and I'm certainly happy to brief you on the details of where else that water's going.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions, Supervisor Arnold?
Nope. No.
Okay. Everybody's good?
With that, Mr. Chairman, if no other, I'd move approval of consent.
Second.
Roll call vote, Madam Clerk.
And that is as amended on item number 7?
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Thank you.
And waive the reading.
The waive the reading? There is no reading. Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes. Thank you. Okay.
Move to approve the presentations.
Second.
All right, presentation calendar.
Would you like a roll call?
Please.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yeah.
Mr. Arnold. Mrs. Arnold, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, thank you.
Tongue-tied today.
Okay, presentation calendar, item 21, Bike Month resolution. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be pleased to have Angela Nelson of our rideshare program coordinator, in fact, come to the lectern. And I am very pleased to read a resolution proclaiming May 2013 as Bike Month, May 13th through the 17th as Bike to Work Week, and May 8th as Bike to School Day in San Luis Obispo County. It reads as follows. Whereas bicycle commuting is an effective means to reduce air pollution and conserve energy and promotes the livability of communities by reducing traffic, noise, and congestion. And whereas Bike Month 2013 is an inclusive request to people of all ages and abilities, whether veteran or novice, commuter or recreational rider, to ride bicycles to their destinations throughout San Luis Obispo County. And whereas rideshare will help businesses, organizations, and schools encourage and reward customers, students, and employees who commute by bicycle through incentives, awards, lockers, and other benefits. And whereas Bike Month promotions such as Bike to Work Week, Bike to School Day, the I Ride Bike Challenge.
Again this year, and we are very excited to be able to provide this to the community. This is a national endeavor. This is an international endeavor, and as is indicative to our beautiful community, we have a very strong program here. It's the largest community-led event in the county, and it is truly countywide, thanks to Atascadero and Paso Robles and Arroyo Grande really stepping up over the years and growing beautiful programs. We are looking at the Bike In Movie, which has happened for many years. We have the Tweed Ride, which has grown very strongly. And then we also have the World Bicycle Relief Poker Run is happening again this year. And this raises money to buy bikes for children in underserved countries. And then in addition to that, we have the Cycle de Mayo in Atascadero. This is coming off of their wonderful community family-friendly events from last year and will be around Atascadero Lake. And we have Bike Fest, which has been going strong in AG for many years, right after the farmers market on the 11th. The two competitions, again, are to encourage folks to dust off that bike maybe, or if you've been using your bike, you get a chance to bike around people more often in our beautiful weather as it warms up. We have an individual challenge this year, which is the iRide Commute Challenge, and that's mano a mano for everyone logging trips throughout the month of May, and there will be two winners, most miles and most trips logged. And then we have a team challenge that'll just be during Bike to Work Week, and it's just commute challenges, so May 13th to 17th. Teams of 10, so within the office or a community organization or friends, you can call it whatever you like, and you'll be competing against each other. There'll be four winners, one for each region of the county. As Bike Month, as I said, has grown so strongly throughout the county, we want to encourage that everywhere. And then, of course, we have a number of schools throughout the county who are going to be doing bike to school days, bike rodeos, and participating in family-friendly events, including Kittical Mass. And we have the Coalition, who is going to be going strong, as always, with their confidence workshops. The Bike Kitchen, I believe I counted this morning, has 12 or 14 days open in the month of May alone. And I think that there's a confidence workshop almost every week. So I appreciate your support of this and encourage you guys to sign up for the Suit Commute if you haven't already and join the Group Commute, which will be on the 29th of May, to come in for a breakfast. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Angela.
You have a comment. I did see a comment slip from Mr. Greening, I believe, on this item.
That is correct. Mr. Greening, I'm sorry.
Oh, you don't have to apologize.
He got it. He's there.
I'm Eric Greening, and good morning. And, yes, I certainly thank you for recognizing this. Of all means of transportation, motorized and non-motorized, from the standpoint of the laws of physics, the bicycle is the most efficient in terms of energy use. Of course, the energy comes not from oil, but from food. And so our energy producers are our people in agriculture. And speaking of food, I would like to thank the organizers. There are so many wonderful things on the calendar. Pedal to Paella, and by the way, there is a veggie option, and you can bring veggies to put in it. But Pedal to Paella has moved from the Sunday of Memorial Day weekend to the Saturday of Memorial Day weekend, and I would like to compliment them for making that change. That will make the RTA service friendly with connecting people, particularly people from all over the North County, with this event, so they don't have to ride their bikes all the way home to Paso Robles in the dark. They can put it on the bike rack of the Route 9. So I hope this event stays on Saturdays from here on to integrate with that friendly schedule. But the main thing I wanted to tell you as supervisors is that to follow up through the month and continuing, I think it is very important that our legislative platform aggressively seek to restore the cut funding for non-motorized transportation. We only got a two-year federal transportation reauthorization bill. It merged several categories of non-motorized transportation and collectively cut them by 34%. And I know as slow cog people you're doing this, but I think the county, as a county, needs to be heard from as well, that this is important to us, that to have a successful bike month and to have successfully people biking and walking all year, it's important to have safe connectivity for people to do that. And as you know, we have unfinished links such as Atascadero to Templeton, and it's important to restore the historic level of commitment that came from the federal government, that comes from all of us taxpayers, many of whom do not drive. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening.
Mr. Chairman, if I might follow on, pick up on something Mr. Greening said. For those who are daunted about the prospect of changing your commute pattern and biking to work, I am fond of pointing out that it is Bike to Work Week. It doesn't say
the generosity that makes our place such a wonderful community. And one of the areas that sometimes people don't realize is how many people volunteer for a variety of different services that our county government provides, and you'll hear from some of this, ranging from everything from our libraries to our district attorney's office. So we want to salute those folks. I'm not sure if there's anyone specifically here to accept this, but if anyone rushes to the first one to rush to the podium gets the resolution. I see our library director is rushing there. I know our parks director wants to come and say a few things too. So let me read this resolution. Whereas volunteers contributed an invaluable service to the County of San Luis Obispo, and whereas the Retired Senior Volunteer Program has provided hands-on support to air travelers in the county for 22 years, their commitment is evidenced by an average length of service per volunteer of over 13 years. Animal service volunteers numbering 75 to 100 persons have directly affected the care and quality of life of more than 4,000 homeless pets sheltered by animal services. County Fire has over 200 dedicated volunteer firefighters who respond to 10,000 calls, including wildland structure fires, medical emergencies, traffic accidents, and technical rescues. District Attorney's Office, Cal Poly, and Cuesta College student volunteers contributed 4,500 hours performing a variety of duties for the victim's witness assistance and criminal divisions. General Services, a group of five tireless volunteers, have provided nearly 550 hours assisting the public at our information desk here in the lobby, and have been appointed as deputy commissioners of marriage to perform ceremonies. So you can mosey into our building, ask somebody a question at the information desk, and get married at the same time. This is great. Library, nearly 800 volunteers contribute over 45,200 hours serving the public both independently and in affiliation with 15 Friends of the Library groups and foundations. Parks and Golf volunteers have donated 52,301 hours of service providing maintenance and repairs of trails, structures, and natural areas, as well as helping with special events, fundraising, and recreational programming. Planning and Building Department, volunteers and student interns contributed 3,200 hours per year assisting the department with its mission of promoting wise use of land and helping build great communities. The Probation and Sheriff's Department works with restorative partners, Sister Teresa Harpin, Aaron McNulty, and their 150 community student volunteers who have served 6,869 hours providing classes, tutoring, sports programming, and pastoral counseling at Juvenile Hall and the jail. Public Works volunteers' contributions include working with the Adopt-a-Road program, Creek Cleanup Day, and over 220 well owners and precipitation observers who provide data to help the county and its residents understand our region's water resources. The Sheriff's Aero Squadron provides transportation and aerial support for the narcotic unit and assists search and rescue during missions and trainings. The Sheriff's Auxiliary Volunteer Patrol assists with crime prevention, education, and patrols neighborhoods and business districts in an effort to increase public safety. The Sheriff's Search and Rescue respond 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to search for missing persons and assist with investigations and evidentiary searches. And the University of California Cooperative Extension Farm Advisors, 400-plus volunteers donate their time and talent to support one of the largest 4-H Youth Development Club programs in the state. And 120 certified master gardeners volunteer more than 5,000 hours providing community education programs for sustainable landscape practices. And if I've left any other areas of volunteerism out, let's just salute you too, but this is quite impressive. So now, therefore, be it resolved that our Board of Supervisors does hereby honor our county volunteers for their ongoing contributions and recognize April 21st through the 27th of 2013 as National Volunteer Week in San Luis Obispo County. And let's give all our volunteers, some of who are here and some of our department heads are here, a big round of applause.
Honorable Board of Supervisors, members of the audience, Brian Reynolds, Library Director. As Supervisor Hill just read, the library is just a small part of this wonderful effort. Volunteers helping the county, and in so doing, helping promote our county as a wonderful place to live. It's humbling to hear of all the wonderful things that people do. This resolution has grown over the years to include more people and more departments. Again, very honored and proud to be a part of it. And without these wonderful, dedicated volunteers, we couldn't operate in the way we do. So thank you very much.
You want to post this in our city-county library?
Happy to do it.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds.
I see some other department heads, and maybe Kurt, even after that, the sheriff
wants to speak. Curtis. Volunteers. As the resolution noted, we've just year-to-date had over 52,000 hours of volunteerism, and that's valued at over $1 million. certainly impossible to provide the county parks and golf services that we do without all of the help from our volunteers. We have Lions and Lioness groups that raise funds to make sure that kids swim for free every summer. No cost. They can go down and swim every single day. We have trail advocates like the folks from Ride Napomo and Vineyard homeowners, neighbors, and Central Coast Concerned Mountain Bikers that put in thousands of hours to make sure the trails are safe. They patrol them. They clean them. They do pruning. It's incredible. The golf course volunteers take care of beautification that our staff simply can't touch. They do a lot of planting and pruning around the clubhouses and really make the place sparkle. But I want to make a special thank you to folks from Cayucas. We had groups that got together, raised over $40,000, and got volunteers, including a playground installer professional, to go and install a brand new playground at Cayucas Beach just south of the pier. It's incredible. That was just completed a few weeks ago. As you go up to Cayucas, stop by the pier and take a look, have some fun, and ride the new slide, go on the swings. I just want to applaud them and say thanks again to all of our volunteers.
Thank you, Mr. Black. Mrs. Wallen, followed by, I guess, would be Deputy Chief
Undersheriff.
former mayor of Morro Bay, no.
Hi, I'm Vera Wallen, the president of the Foundation for the San Luis Obispo County Public Libraries. But what I want to say today, besides thanks to all the volunteers, which of course I'm one of those, is I want to thank all of you for acknowledging volunteers as well and strongly as you do. It really makes a difference. People recognize that you recognize them, and so I wanted to say that to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wallen. Undersheriff Olivas.
Yes, thank you for honoring the volunteers, the many volunteers of the county and with the Sheriff's Office. They are truly deserving of that, and taking a moment out of your day to do that is very much appreciated. We are a service organization, and we pride ourselves in the service we provide to the county. We could not provide those services without the many volunteer groups that we have. I wasn't sure if we heard that the Sheriff's Posse on there, and there's also the Sheriff's Dive Team, both heavily involved with volunteers. And they don't only provide volunteer services to the county. Many of these with search and rescue and the Aero Squadron, they provide services to all the cities as well. So thank you very much for the volunteers, and thank you for recognizing them today.
Thank you, Undersheriff Olivas. Mr. Davis, your request to speak.
Good morning. My name is Robert Davis, and I'm president of the Morro Bay Friends of the Library. The Friends have worked with Brian Reynolds for just over a year on plans to remodel our beautiful library building in Morro Bay. We're going to expand library services into additional areas of the building and add about 35% to our usable space while we upgrade the plumbing, the electrical, heating and ventilation systems, and bring the building into compliance with current ADA standards. Our goal is to create a library that's welcoming, open, flexible, inclusive, technologically current, and reflective of our community, and does not require any additional staff. What's unique about our project is that the Friends, who are volunteers, are paying for it. County administration has generously offered to fund the ADA upgrade, and the community of Morro Bay is contributing most of the rest of the $500,000 that we think the remodel will cost. The Friends have collected, volunteers, $300,000 during the past 10 years through book sales and community donations, and we are now beginning our capital campaign to raise the rest of the money. In addition, the county has just recently stepped up and volunteered to provide contract administration and oversight and when we're ready to begin the construction, and we are deeply grateful for that. The thing that inspires us and keeps our volunteers excited about the project is that everyone involved wants to succeed. The city, the county, The friends and the community are working together as a team to keep everything moving forward. We hope that in the end, this project will serve as a model for all future public and private endeavors in the county. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis.
We would not, and you've heard from some of our leaders, we would not be able to be as effective as we are in all the different services we provide without the community helping us. So we really are truly grateful for that and hope to get even more people involved.
Thank you. Supervisor Arnold?
Yes, and while we're recognizing National Volunteer Month, I think we can all agree that volunteerism, the spirit of volunteerism is alive and well here in San Luis Obispo County, that another reason it makes it makes our county such a wonderful place to live. We've heard about all the wonderful volunteer opportunities and hours that are spent helping our county departments. So many, many thousands more working in our schools, providing our youth opportunities from sports, teams and music and on it goes, and seniors and just so many other areas in the county where our volunteers provide opportunities that we wouldn't have available here otherwise. So I just want to thank all the volunteers with our county departments and outside of our county departments while we all recognize National Volunteerism Week.
Thank you. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Mr. Hill read through that lengthy tome of a resolution, I was really struck by the variety of opportunities here. It mirrors the variety of things that this county does. And so, yes, thank you to all the volunteers. Thank you, Mr. Davis, for bringing up a wonderful example of what volunteers are doing in a highly substantive way. And I'll just make a pitch that, hey, we can always use more help. There are lots of things to do, something I think to suit anybody's interest, and I hope the shining example of the folks that you've heard reference is inspiration to those who haven't yet joined into one of the programs that this county sponsors.
Thank you. Thank you to all my colleagues for their comments, and I would just like to add the fact that having been a former Parks Commissioner, when the Parks Volunteer Barbecue started a number of years ago with Stacy King coordinated, there was probably 40 or 50 people there. Now I know that there's well over 150, possibly 200 that attend. And the beauty part about volunteerism is there's no age limit. We go from the very young to the senior citizens, and like Deputy Director Black said, they do the trails in Napomo, they do the trails all over Santa Margarita, the lake area, and all these different areas of the county, 4-H volunteers, the sports volunteers, all these. We couldn't live in the community that we do without the volunteers, and we surely do appreciate it. Thank you very much. Okay, moving on, next resolution, commending Deputy Scott Curry, Deputy Roger Deegan, Deputy Chad Nicholson, and Pediatric Nurse Laura Brown. Mr. Meacham.
And Mr. Sheriff, are you going to be joined with these folks?
Yes.
Well, as I was asked to read this and noticed one of the names on here that I'm very familiar with, actually I went on my first ride-along in Paso PD with a young officer by the name of Roger Degnan. And when I read what he had done here, it was not a surprise to me. He is willing to step up at any point in time. He was an outstanding officer with the city of Paso Robles, and I'm sure he will extend that service to the Sheriff's Department. So with that, the following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas on November 11, 2012, Deputy Scott Curry was working as a recruit training officer at Allen Hancock College, and Deputy Curry was notified of an unconscious student in a classroom, and he immediately began CPR until relieved by paramedics. And his immediate actions were lauded by treated physicians as having a significant impact on saving the life of the student. And whereas on February the 24th, 2013, Deputy Roger Degnan overheard radio broadcasts of a structure fire on Bachel Lane in San Luis Obispo. Deputy Degnan immediately responded to the location and within minutes began evacuating a total of 9 residents from the structure, and during the evacuation was momentarily trapped near a propane tank that had ignited, yet he continued to remain calm and guide the evacuation. And on March 2, 2013, Deputy William Chad Nicholson was dispatched to an unconscious female juvenile who had just been pulled from the water at Leffingwell Landing Beach in Cambria. whereupon his arrival moments later, the juvenile was in severe distress and having difficulty breathing. An off-duty pediatric nurse, Laura Brown, was nearby and also responded to assist the juvenile, and both Deputy Nicholson and Nurse Brown initiated CPR, and after a short time, the juvenile began recovery and was turned over to responding paramedics for transport to a local hospital. Whereas the quick actions of Deputy Nicholson and Nurse Brown aided in the full recovery of the juvenile victim, and now therefore be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors commends Deputy Scott Curry, Roger Degnan, Chad Nicholson, and pediatric nurse Laura Brown for using their training and experience in initiating life-saving efforts which resulted in saving human lives.
I thank our employees that are here to honor all that are receiving their awards. We have an awards committee that actually reviews and makes these recommendations for these awards, so it's done by a committee of employees that actually reviews these events. Some of them are obvious, you know, to us as soon as we see them, particularly when it comes to a life-saving award. You know, as you know, about a week ago, we had the tragedy in Boston, and it was a particular note to me because my wife, as you know, probably is a marathon runner. The time of the explosion, it was very close to her regular time. Now, she did not compete in it, but it made me really pay attention to what was going on in the event. But if you noticed, immediately following the explosions, several things happened. You saw people running away from the explosion, and you saw people running to the explosion. The people running to were a combination of first responders, law enforcement, fire, medical, and then you had volunteers, you know, odd enough, running straight into danger, not knowing if there's a secondary explosion, not knowing what they're running into, but in order to save lives. Law enforcement traditionally is that's not our role all the time. Like the fire guys, they get all the good stuff. But for us, we're out there and ready to respond. And as you've seen over at least the time that I've been here, we have a number of employees from the jail and patrol that on a regular basis, they're saving lives. And they put that above all. To willingness to step in, whether it be in a secondary role as Deputy Curry down at the police academy and saves a recruit's life, Deputy Nicholson, who saves a young child's life with the aid of Laura Brown to come to administer CPR, to Degnan, who goes into fire, and I've tried to tell him he's not a fireman, but he ran in there anyways. These are great opportunities and great times, and this is, to me, one of the larger or the highest awards that we can give our employees. So what we do to recognize them is not only try to do it in a formal manner, a presentation, either a department a meeting or in front of the board, and the other thing we do is we give them a medal. So I kind of feel like the Great Oz here presenting a medal and a pin for their uniform. They should display this proudly. It's a great tribute to the act that they provided to some member of the county. I have a certificate to be presented, life-saving certificate for Laura Brown. So on behalf of San Luis Obispo County, on behalf of the Sheriff's Office, and I'm sure on behalf of the family that Laura came to the aid of the young girl, we want to thank Laura for her service. We wish we could be here, but we understand, and we thank you for being here and to represent her. Deputy Roger Degnan. Deputy Chad Nicholson. Deputy Scott Curry.
I want to thank the members of the Board of Supervisors for allowing me just to be here this morning. My wife is a very humble person, and I'm sure she's quite relieved to be on an airplane right now flying back east rather than be here. But she's supporting a close friend who lost a mother, a 35-year-old son-in-law, and her father just in the last few weeks. But she'd want me to make it clear that she appreciates the recognition, but she has said it was an act of God that put the right citizen responders on the beach that day. But it was an act of you, the County Board of Supervisors, and the civic leaders for the village of Cambria that put the public safety resources and personnel in the proper place at the proper time so that this life-threatening situation would have a happy ending for a 7-year-old girl and her family. So thank you for taking care of those responsibilities. And in light of what happened in Boston, I want to thank you guys, too, all of your heroes. Whether you, I've been in public safety half of my life. I've never heard a public safety person admit to being a hero. But you are heroes. Thank you all.
Once again, thank you for taking the time to recognize the employees and Laura and Steve for being here, and congratulations, you guys well deserved.
And helping our citizens, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Arnold?
Yes, I just want to, again, thank all the recipients today, and a special shout-out. The Nicholsons are close family friends of ours, and it's not surprising. Chad's grown up to be such a great young man, and it didn't take long on the job before we're seeing him here in front of us, so thank you.
You knew that was coming, right?
I couldn't resist.
We told her not to, but you know. Sorry about that. Okay, other comments? Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our next resolution is one proclaiming National Correctional Officers Week, which is another group of unsung heroes that we don't get to see very often. And the resolution I will read is as follows. Whereas the first week of May is recognized as National Correctional Officer and Employees Week, and whereas within the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Office, correctional deputies provide important services to the citizens by maintaining the safety and security of the county jail. And whereas the staff at the county jail is comprised of approximately 176 correctional deputies, correctional technicians, legal clerks, food service personnel, medical and mental health professionals, and whereas with a steady increase in the number of incarcerated inmates who have substance abuse and medical and mental health problems, correctional deputies and custody staff work under demanding and often dangerous circumstances. And whereas San Luis Obispo County will recognize the valuable contributions of the Sheriff's Office custody staff for the important role they play in preserving public safety and maintaining a highly professional county jail. And now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize and appreciate the ongoing public service of the correctional deputies and custody staff provided to the residents of San Luis Obispo County. Sheriff Parkinson.
Picture staff.
You bet.
Yeah. Get a picture with you.
That'd be nice.
Thank you. Good job.
Come on up.
First one. We're not any scarier than
you. Thank you.
Thank you. Good job. Good to see you.
Thanks so much for what you do.
Good job. Thank you. Good job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for your help.
Thank you. I'm sorry to go back there and wake Haskell up. I think he fell asleep on us.
Thank you. Good work. Thank you, sir. Good job.
Not you.
No, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir. Squeeze in. Good luck, but squeeze in.
Good job. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Once again, Ian Parkinson, Sheriff Corner. Thank you again for recognizing our staff. I'm going to be very brief. I'm going to let the undersheriff speak about the custody staff, but I'll just say this. And I know some of them are older than I am, but I feel like a proud parent today. Between the earlier presentation and this one, we have really good employees. I'm so fortunate to be in the position I am with the employees. The employees make it happen. And the custody staff, for as much change as they have had to go through over the past 2 years, and how professional they are, is a really tribute to their hard work. So, Undersheriff?
Thank you again, once again, for this opportunity to speak before you. I was teasing the sheriff earlier that he's kind of a no-script guy. I'm more of a script guy, so I think he's training me to be more of a no-script guy. So forgive me if I ramble here a little bit, but it's truly a privilege for me to be here and speak about who you're honoring today with this resolution. As you know, I came over to the sheriff's office approximately about a year ago. And when I came over, the biggest I had to deal with custody was a two-person holding cell. And if we kept somebody in that holding cell for more than an hour, I got concerned. And we wanted to get him down to county jail. And really, I had no concept about what goes on inside custody and the impacts and the dedication and the hard work it takes. We have almost 800 people in custody in San Luis Obispo County. Most people don't realize that. Most people have no understanding of how the jail environment works. And what I tell...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also want to add to the remarks from our undersheriff. You know, I've spent some time happily as a visitor at the custody hotel, not an actual guest. And it's a tough situation. It's a tough place to work in. And I know the men and women there, I mean, besides the great job that they do, it can be really taxing on one to have to work there every day. So we are always pleased to salute you. It's a tough job. You've done a great job, and we've asked more of you, as the state has asked more of us over the last couple of years, and we're really proud of the work you do.
Thank you. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've said on many occasions that my first tour of the jail in 2006 was one of the most eye-opening and educational experiences of my life, fortunately, again, as a guest there. But I recently, within the last few months, have gone back as part of the women's jail expansion to see take another trip through there. And I'm struck by a couple of things. One of them is... you know, as the undersheriff indicated, a lot of people don't even visualize the jail. It's a concrete block building at the end of a dead-end street, not in view very much of the highway. But what goes on in there is so complicated and so sensitive and so important in terms of understanding the needs and the safety of prisoners and their mental health needs and all the rest, that I have continued to be struck by the work that corrections officers do. You add on top of that the change that Supervisor Hill referenced with realignment, where the vision of what a county custody facility is all about is changing rapidly, and my admiration grows. So I thank you very much, and we're more than happy to proclaim this week, as we do yearly, and wish you the best in your very important work down on Kansas Avenue. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Gibson. Supervisor Meacham.
Again, just to repeat my colleagues, thank you. I have also toured the facility a couple of times, and unless you've ever been through that facility to tour it, you cannot appreciate what these guys and ladies have to go through. And I would not want your job. Thank God there are people like you that do want this job, and I greatly appreciate it.
Supervisor Arnold?
I, too, want to say thank you. And I know our sheriff's deputies that are out in the community are very visible to us all, and I know that you all go to work every day. You work just as hard keeping the community safe, and we appreciate you.
Thank you. And I'll just add that thanks to everybody involved, all our correctional officers and everybody involved out there at the jail. And I, too, have been out there, and it was under the guidance of former Undersheriff Basti, and he got a great deal of satisfaction knowing that I'd never been to the jail facility before. So the doors clanged, and the buzzers clanged louder, and everybody had a smile on their face because here was a greenie coming through. But it's a remarkable place. You do a remarkable job for the safety and security of the people of the county, and we thank you very much for your job. Thank you. Okay. Moving on to public comment, general public comment. I've got about 6 or 8 requests to speak. Anybody else wants to speak, get your request in.
Take we'll a break before that?
No.
No?
We'll get that in after. We're going to break after.
We've got to clear the room anyway.
Yeah. Okay, we'll start with Ben DeFada, Jeff Edwards, and Eric Greening.
I'm going to go take a break.
We're going to break in another 10 minutes. We'll do public comment and then break. You did.
Good morning. Good morning, Board Chair Kovach. I am Ben DeFada from the torn-up village of Los Sosos. A continuation of last week's subject is a secret groundbreaking ceremony that our favorite supervisor had without inviting the 5 of us, or for that matter, the whole town and the media for this milestone event. A $200 million sewer that the people of Los Sosos will be paying for the next 30 years. Well, his cronies friends that are going to make a lot of money were probably there smiling like the Cheshire Cat. Why, even the shovels were probably made of gold. The same letter that his assistant sent to Gibson, his crony friends and others, and signed by her, were the only ones there. But last week, Gibson took the blame for the letter. Further stated, we do know that the cost of the project will be difficult for some members of the community to handle, but we will find ways to help those in need. That's quote. Here we go again, using other people's money. And Board, it's not some people, it's going to be several thousand people. Don't let him buffalo you or other board members. It will be for many years because as property taxes rise, the usual 2% every year, so more property owners and renters will be joining the poor with the Gibson Relief Program Agency. I sometimes wonder why he is keeping a tight rein on hitting this project. Where is the up-to-date cost and progress that was promised? Please pick up your pink slip on your way out. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. DeFada. Jeff Edwards.
17 seconds.
Okay. We'll add that to the account. Jeff Edwards, followed by Eric Greening and Julie Tacker.
Thank you, Mr. Teixeira, board members. Again, my name is Jeff Edwards. It's nice to hear that there'll be an update on June 18th for the Los Sosos Wastewater Project. However, why it wasn't scheduled earlier, I don't know. There are very important things happening right now, and I'll go into those in a moment. But it's likely that this presentation from the Public Works Department will lack sincerity. And I would go on to predict that Mr. Gibson, at the end of the presentation and the public comment, will diminish and discount any public remarks that were made in connection with the item. As he did this morning, you may have noted, on consent item number 18. Instead of challenging the facts presented in this bogus ag reuse program, instead of disputing the facts, he attacks the people. That's the weakest approach one can take. To his marginalization of the people of Los Sosos, it's a pattern many of you have observed. And again, Mr. Gibson, if you really want to make an impact, state some facts. Dispute some facts, if you can.
Just a chair.
The two items I wanted to touch on this morning with regard to the project are, one, the dewatering of Morro Bay. Now, think about that. Dewatering all of the water in Morro Bay, because, frankly, that's kind of the way it's shaken out right now. There are over 50 wells that have been drilled, well, not all of them drilled, most of them drilled, in Baywood Park, along 3rd Street, Pismo Avenue, El Morro Avenue. Many of these wells are within 50 feet of the bay. They're extraction wells, they're intended to dewater the bay and the upper groundwater basin, the perched aquifer in Baywood Park, so that the collection system can be installed. Well, and sure, this is the contractor's problem because that's what's in the contract. But if the contractors fail or have problems, where's that problem going to end up? It's going to end up on the project. And there's still time in terms of solutions. I'd like to propose there's still time to look at trenchless technologies for the highest groundwater areas. Look at maybe vacuum collection systems. Look at some option that will reduce the cost we're likely to incur. The second item I'd like to touch on, and we covered this a week or two ago, I forget, wet weather storage at the treatment site facility. There's inadequate space. We've suggested, the community, the naysayers have suggested for some time that site's too small, and sure enough, it's too small. So what is Public Works going to do? They're going to throw another $500,000 to $1 million at over-designing a pond on a slope bank, extra construction costs, and why? When really all you have to do is, for a third of the money, go across Los Osos Valley and acquire 10 acres for this wet weather storage. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Mr. Greening, followed by Julie Tacker and Lindy Owen.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I do know that 2 weeks ago when you weren't meeting, the county was going through some emergency exercises, and I'm going to continue requesting an agendized report out from that and what was learned. There's a whole new area of concern now rising that comes out of, I know all of us have been feeling with the people of Boston and the people of Massachusetts and the people from all over who were there, whether they were physically injured or simply affected by the events emotionally and by the subsequent manhunt. If, heaven forbid, something like that were to happen here, just as we've tried to learn what we could from Katrina and from Fukushima, I think there are a lot of questions we need to ask about the response in Massachusetts. At what level were decisions made? Obviously, as a user of public transit, a particular question is, what does it mean when a manhunt shuts down all the public transit? If you were on a vehicle when the public transit is shut down, does that mean you are locked on that vehicle without a bathroom for the duration of the manhunt? Does it mean you are made to exit from the vehicle wherever you happen to be, whether there's a safe shelter or not? Who is going to let you in when there's a manhunt going on? What if there was a manhunt for probably was not what you were looking at 2 weeks ago? But these are also questions that need to be asked and answered in case, heaven forbid, such a thing might ever happen here or near enough to here that a manhunt might spread to here. So lots of emergency response questions need to be talked about. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Julie Tacker, followed by Lindy Owen and Richard Margeson.
Good morning again. I am Julie Tacker from District 2 in Los Osos, where I've been marginalized as a frequent commenter. I prefer to think of us as the Fab Five, dedicated and educated. I am encouraged that there'll be a June 18th project update. I did only hear one supervisor ask for that update and push that there be a real update and not just bringing back contract amendments, which is what Mr. Gibson characterized the update as. We will want to hear about those contract extensions, amendments, but I think I'd like to speak to those separately from the actual update and what is included in that update. Let me just give you a few ideas. The project management and engineering, of course, traffic plans and conflicts, archaeological, cultural resources, snails everywhere. Dewatering, as Mr. Edwards expressed, and the quality and the quantities of the dewatering water. The ISJ and the groundwater management plan, let's hear about that. Blending upper aquifer with lower aquifer, delivering polluted water to the citizenry. The advancing of seawater intrusion and nitrate testing, the increased sodium in our drinking supply. Coastal development permits will be needing amendments. We'd like to know more about those. We're moving a pump station. I want to know how that's going and where. The Jacamazi purchase, low-income assistance, as
contractors are moving through the streets. People are starting to feel like they really are going to have to pay for this, and they don't know where the money's going to come from. The HCP, the LCP, the state revolving fund, and reducing the interest to the loan. The newsletters, let's get some consistency. We haven't seen the March newsletter, and we're well into April. How much USDA funds are left? How far will the collection system be in the ground when those funds are depleted and we are asking for state revolving funds? A budget update. And mysteriously, there was a secret groundbreaking. If you're so proud of your project, if you're so impressed by its remarkable progress, why would you have to hold a groundbreaking in secret? We want a project too. We want to be part of a project. There should be no secrets.
Lindy Owen, followed by Richard Margeson and Kimberly Daniels.
Lindy Owen again from Los Osos. This morning I walked out, and we're on our fifth week of guerrilla construction on my street, which is a lot of handicapped people try to walk it. Now they're going other directions. But today, no 72-hour notice, not even, I got a 2-minute notice, only because I asked what they were doing now. They're putting in a huge recycled water line and fiber optics. HDR, again, just to remind you, here's the contract deal. It's all, you can see it on the computer. You'd be shocked to see what we were promised. HDR, $7.7 million they're being paid for construction management and for PR. I'm supposed to know what's going on my block. I'm supposed to be able to plan ahead. My handicapped neighbors should be able to get through a street. A June update. That's way late, according to the contract and the arrangements that were made. And Mr. Gibson knows that this is supposed to be going on. I know that this is a county update, but we have no information. There's a website that is not friendly to use. I don't go to it. I have a lot of questions. What's with the Tri-W, the ugliest undeveloped piece of land in Los Osos? It's an eyesore at this point. And none of the wildflower seeds came up that were supposedly all supposed to be coming up. And we're not getting any more rain. So that will be what we have for a central of town. We spent quite a bit of our sewer money on that. As of yesterday, I believe it's $30.5 million drinking water. We need these kinds of things to take place. It's still not too late to try to repair this bad design for Los Osos. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Richard Margeson, followed by Kimberly Daniels and Matt Olson.
Richard Margeson, last week we put this, we discussed this email about the secret groundbreaking. After public comment was done, Mr. Gibson didn't address the questions we had about the secret meeting. What he did was he came back and blasted, it must have been me because I'm the one that put this up there, that it didn't have a date on it and that he's the one that actually wrote that. Well, how would the public viewing this know that Mr. Gibson's the one that wrote it? If you look at the heading, from Sherriott Spiro to Bruce Gibson, and it's signed by Sherry. How would we know that? But see, that was his way of deflecting the issue, as he does all of the time. Just like this morning on item 18. Oh, we're going to have an update. Instead of saying, yeah, maybe we should put these contracts off and look at them when we come back. And I don't know if you caught it, but he said, this is part of the disposal plan, and I'd be happy to address where the rest of the water is going with any of you individually. When did this become a disposal plan? There's no document out there for this wastewater project that says this is a disposal plan for the recycled water. The plan that you approved last year, recycled water management plan. It doesn't say disposal plan. But you guys do nothing. And you wonder why when he gets done, after we're done with public comment, and he has his little quips back at us, that there's outbursts from the back of the room. I'm not going to sit there and let him lie to you or deceive you. Mr. Greening says all the time, highest office in the land is citizen. As an elected official, it's your job to earn the public's respect. And that's by doing something. By doing something. And I'm leaving Ms. Arnold out of this because she just got here. And she seems to be interested in where we're going with all of this. But Mr. Meacham, you and I met with Chuck Cicina from Los Osos about the water rate structure. 2 days later, Pablo spun it for you, and you did nothing after that. And since then, there's been 7 reports published that say that the commercial consumption in Los Osos is at least 2.5 times what we talked to you about that day. That's going to be coming back to you. Mr. Gibson knows it's coming back to you. Mr. Hill sat through 6 major meetings on Los Osos in his term in office. Has not asked one question. Gwen Taylor tracked that. 23 hours of hearings. Mr. Hill has asked not one question on Los Osos issues. Mr. Teixeira has asked slightly more than that. And Mr. Gibson spins everything. Everything.
Thank you, Mr. Markison. Kimberly Daniels, followed by Matt Olson.
Good morning, Chairman Teixeira and honorable board members. I wanted to speak this morning because over the last several weeks, there's been a number of challenges that have been made to the board and comments made to the board during public comment period and in some of the online news media about the salaries of our legislative assistants. And I think that if criticism is going to be handed out, then it should be done based on facts. So factually, I want to state on the record, not a member of this Board of Supervisors was seated at the time the changes were made to how the salaries for the legislative assistants would be calculated. That was done by a prior administration in December of 2006. I was present at the meeting where it took place. None of the existing legislative assistants were serving as LAs at that time. Our county has a prevailing wage ordinance that was voter passed in about 1979 and implemented in about 1983 after a few lawsuits. That initiative says that our county pays salaries based on the change in compensation after it's studied with comparator entities. Those comparator entities be able to recruit people to do the job. They work very, very hard. They work far in excess on average of their 40 hours a week. And I know that because I've contacted them on weekends and holidays and after hours when I've needed something in regards to one of your district issues, because we represent employees that live all over the county. So I want to thank the LAs for the work they do and state they are not overpaid. And your board knows if I thought that there was anything that had been done amiss, I would have been the first one at this podium screaming because fairness is of critical importance to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Daniels. My last request to speak is Matt Olson. Welcome, Captain Olson.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and board members. My name is Matt Olson. I'm the new assigned commander of the California Highway Patrol Office here in San Luis Obispo on California Boulevard. I just wanted to take this opportunity to introduce myself to those of you who I have not yet met. I've been on the Highway Patrol for 25 years, and I grew up on the Central Coast in the Santa Ynez Valley. And between 2006 and 2011, I was the commander of the Santa Maria Highway Patrol Office. Most recently, I was up in Santa Cruz for nearly 2 years. But now I'm back pretty much home and happy to be here. And I'm available for any issues or needs that you have. Love to speak with all of you. And I just wanted to say that I'm available whenever you need me.
Thank you, Captain Olson. Questions?
No? Welcome home, Commander. Welcome.
Thank you. Good job.
One thing that was submitted, Mr. Chair, for the public record from Lenny Grant, an architect that some of us know, or all of us know probably. He is the head of the EVC cluster, the building design construction cluster of the strategy project. This is a letter that I'll let my colleagues read before it goes into the record on the Airport Land Use Commission and the concerns that they have as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hill. Comments from the board?
I'm taking a break.
Okay. Close public comment. We'll take a break and be back here at 10:50. Thank you, Madam Clerk. Would you introduce the next item, please?
Certainly. That's item number 26, consideration of a status update of the Zone 1-1A Arroyo Grande Creek Channel Projects Water Management Plan, Alternative 3A, Project 300477, and WMP Modified 3C, Project 300478, 4th District.
Thank you very much. Ms. Ogred, Mr. Lee, welcome.
Thank you. You ready to go? Are we live? Great. Let's see here. Jeff?
I should just try and click it.
There we go. All right. Good morning, Chairman Teixeira and members of the board. Jill Ogren, Public Works Utilities Division. Today I'm here teaming up with Jeff Lee, also of the Utilities Division, as we transition from our project planning and development phase of the highway management program into our exciting project execution phase, which Jeff Lee will be leading. So here's our general location. This helps give you a perspective between where the AG Creek Channel is with respect to the community of Oceano. Today we will give you a brief update on the two projects. We will also be showcasing a five-minute video that Jeff created, which takes you on a picture walk of the channel. And then we will go into a funding status update discussing the grants, loans, and bridge financing needed. But before we do that, I would like to take this opportunity to give you an update on several other efforts, which are not the focus of today's discussion. The Highway 1 and 13th Street project was recently at the Planning Commission on March 14th for a coastal development permit. It will be coming to your board on June 4th for a coastal development appeal. The sandbar management plan, our consultant schedule shows that we will be getting a submittal of an administrative draft of the sandbar management plan on May 14th, and that's an effort that's being spearheaded by Mark Hutchinson of our Environmental Division. As far as the Flapgate alternative study, we've recently received a preliminary alternative study, which we had the San Luis Coastal Resource Conservation District prepare. We're in the process of doing some revisions and edits and hope to have a final product by the middle of May. And with respect to reed management, as you may recall, last year's removal of reeds, which was done by crews using hand tools.
Jill, good morning, Chairman Teixeira and members of the board. My name is Jeff Lee from your Public Works Department. This slide shows a point of reference for you, and these projects come to you from the Arroyo Grande Creek Channel Waterway Management Program and the EIR, which were adopted and certified in November of 2010. So since the last board update in May of last year, the alternative 3A, also known as the short-term project, that scope has remained consistent, while the modified 3C, or a portion of the long-term project, has been updated to remove several unnecessary flood control structures, while including some flood control walls, some levee top stabilization, and turf reinforcement mats, also called slope stabilization. These updates were the result of some project refinements, and they will increase the overall flow capacity of Arroyo Grande Creek while also increasing the flood protection to the north and south levees and providing additional flood protection to the densely populated areas north of the levee. Implementation of these projects will provide some flood protection while also enhancing the water quality and sensitive species habitat within the flood control channel. The project is currently at 50% design plans, and we have submitted an updated project description to the various agencies in order to complete a NEPA document and obtain some environmental resource permits. So just to give you a quick summary, the alternative 3A provides flood protection for the entire channel up to a 10-year storm event with 2 feet of freeboard through the removal of vegetation and sediment and earthwork to build up the height of the north and south levees. The elevation of the north levee will be approximately 1 foot higher than the south levee to protect the residential areas and then direct overtopping flows to the south. The modified 3C project results in a 20-year plus flood protection for areas on the north side of the levee and protects the south levee from catastrophic failure during those overtopping events. So the flood protection of the north levee will be through construction of a 1-foot-high flood control wall for approximately 2,000 feet upstream of the 22nd Street Bridge. And then upstream of the Highway 1 bridge, flood control walls will again direct overtopping to the south into the adjacent agricultural fields. As part of the modified 3C project, an EIR addendum was prepared and approved by the County Planning Department in March of this year. So now these project elements and their locations are graphically shown in the following video, which was developed in an effort to illustrate the project and its goals and to provide a more comprehensive introduction of the project to the various permitting and resource agencies. So if you give me just one moment, I will bring up.
Show the overall project area and represent the project's scope of work. This slide shows a typical before and after project cross-section of Arroyo Grande Creek. Here's an overall view of the project site. Let's highlight a few specific items. Vegetation and sediment management will be done throughout the project area to increase channel capacity and improve the health and diversity of the riparian corridor. Flood control walls will be built along portions of the north levee to protect the residential areas north of the levee system. Turf reinforcement mat along the outside slope of the south levee provides erosion control and slope stabilization. Interlocking concrete blocks along the top of the south levee, upstream of Highway 1, provides overtopping protection, erosion control, and a drivable surface for future levee maintenance. This slide shows where the levee raise and in-place stabilization will happen. This work provides erosion control and overtopping protection to the levee system. Combined, these items make up the waterway management program, alternative 3A, and modified 3C project. Thank you, and please enjoy the following image diary of Arroyo Grande Creek.
Down, down. I think
that's what
the,
I'm talking about, a staff.
Yeah.
All the waterway management image diaries. That's
the rest of the department heads for staff reports. We need entertainment.
Good job.
That was the best
we
production
just set the bar high.
Did.
Yeah. I think Jeff can help you with the choreography and the music.
Put him to work on the Madonna project next year.
All right, let's
good
go.
Job. Thank you.
So before we move on,
okay. Was it the final? Okay.
I wanted to give a lot of credit. Literally, Jeff created that. I simply said, you know, it'd be really great if we could be different so that when we submit all our stuff to the agencies, they don't just put us on a stack next to their desk and go, yeah, whatever. So I said, we got to do something different, Jeff. I go, what about like a video? And literally, it was like 3 days later, he's all, what do you think about this? And I was like, wow. So Jeff just did an amazing job.
Thank you.
And so we'll see if it works. This is our next phase, is if we move into permitting. But now I'd like to talk a little bit about funding sources, because that's more good news. Over the course of the last 3 years, we've been very successful in obtaining grant funding for the Alternative 3A and Modified 3C projects. We've received state grants for 2.8 from Proposition 1E, 2.2 million from Proposition 84, and our latest grant success, which happened after we were here last May for an update, is we've successfully obtained a $2.1 million FEMA Hazard Mitigation Program grant, bringing our total grant funding to $7.1 million. And then in addition to that, we're also pursuing a USDA loan for $1.9 million, so that our total project funding is $9 million. And I did want to mention that the USDA loan will be repaid through Zone 11A and the assessments that are already collected each year. So this slide kind of gives you an overall pictorial of what's happened as a result of getting the additional FEMA grant. You can see in the far right column under local match requirement, last May when we came to see you, we were planning on having all our local match requirement met through a USDA loan, which would have been about a $3 million loan. If you look below for our current funding picture, you can see that now our USDA loan is only $1.9 million, and we'll be using the grant that we just received from FEMA as part of our to help offset the match requirement. The other thing to note is that back in last May, our project cost was at $5 million, and at this point, our project cost is $6.8 million. And that's partly due as we went into 50% related to Modified 3C, and as far as the Alternative 3A project, we've had the increase in sediment removal, environmental mitigation, and NEPA preparation. Which brings us to where we sit today, knowing that we have these grants and loans out there. There are some timing issues with being able to get reimbursed for these, for our costs. Partly, the grants are contingent on, the grant and the loan is contingent on getting our completion of a NEPA document, so we can't begin getting reimbursed for any costs until we complete that. And additionally, we actually have to begin construction due to other nuances of both the loans and the DWR financing. So at this point, we're going to be requesting a $1.1 million in bridge financing, and we'll be doing that through the fiscal year 13-14 budget process to quote unquote bridge the gap between now and when we can begin to get grant reimbursement. The $1.1 million is needed to continue with items of work for both projects, such as project management, securing and finalizing the grant and loan agreements, easements, NEPA document preparation, construction contracting, and the environmental permitting. Some of the interim flood control funding will be needed to cover ineligible grant costs, and these would be repaid to the Flood Control General over time from flood control, Zone 11A revenues. And I believe that, one more slide here. Next steps, that's always a good one. So our next steps are proceeding with the NEPA document preparation. We have scheduled a kickoff meeting with USDA, Corps of Engineers, and FEMA in June. We do have some serious concerns with respect to the responsiveness of the permitting agencies. That is something that could possibly delay our project, and which we're hoping not, which is another reason why we created this video, because we want to get noticed and we want to put this on everyone's radar so we don't so we get a little more a quicker response, hopefully. Our target completion date for NEPA is June 2014. If we're able to meet that deadline, then we would be able to construct the first phase of the project in 2015 and completing it in September of 2016. We will be continue permitting efforts with the resource agencies at this time, and we will also continue our annual vegetation maintenance program, which we've been doing for the last 6 or 7 years, and until we actually implement this project, we have to continue with that. So with that, anybody have any questions?
Supervisor Meacham.
I do, Jill, and this is probably a bit unrelated, and maybe, Dan, you can help me with this as well. I know in my district, some of the real far outlying areas have a difficult time from an insurance standpoint from fire. Does this assist folks at all in their insurance rates due to flooding?
I don't think so. That seems a little...
I know in some cases when you have flooding that they've experienced in the past, they may have a difficult time with either higher insurance rates or not getting insurance for that. And I'm just wondering if by a project like this, would that help? And I that's kind of way off subject, but it just generated something in my mind. So
I'm not sure I have the answer to that, but that's okay. Perhaps it looks like Dean might have an answer for you.
Mr. Benedict.
Dean Benedict, Utilities Division Manager. In the past, we have discussed the insurance rate schedule with the agencies. I believe it's FEMA that runs that program. And because we have had numerous inconsistencies in our permitting with respect to the flood protection that we have to provide, we're not in that program, and we can't get in that program until we correct that or a certain period of time has gone by. And we've demonstrated that we are fully consistent with the permits and the raising of the units, establishing flood protection, that type of thing. This project won't change the flood zone from the 100-year flood zone perspective, so that won't affect that.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Other questions from colleagues? Supervisor Arnold?
Yeah, mine's just a comment. I do appreciate it. Jeff, that was a fantastic presentation. It really was. But how important this work is to our entire county and the agricultural fields nearby, the homes nearby, I'm just really happy to see you being able to pursue this project and really feel it's very, very important. So thank you.
Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Mr. Benedict's indicated, we're not changing the shape of the 100-year floodplain with this. We're getting, with this project, as I understand it, toward a 20-year containment within the levee system, which is certainly better than we have now. But as I've followed this project, you know, one of the
The way the design has been implemented is with the interlocking concrete blocks that provides erosion control and so forth to protect the south levee as the water is overtopping. As floodwaters continue to rise, if they do in that event, then the area between 22nd Street and Highway 1 becomes the next overtopping location. And we've got the in-place stabilization of the levee top as well as the slope stabilization on the exterior to provide for that additional protection.
So
notwithstanding the fact that the north levee is approximately 2 feet higher than the south levee north of the 22nd Street Bridge.
Understood. I mean, an imperfect situation in a whole lot of ways. But I think this project has evolved into a cost-effective attack on a very serious threat that sits right now. Then the other question I had was, it seems like in the long term, the sediment management, you have vegetation management and sediment management, and you referenced that you ended up with more deposition in the channel than you expected. What do we have in place that's going to carry that said management out into the future, and are we funded to be able to keep up with that so that we retain the 20-year quality of this particular project?
Yes, we have part of the waterway management program, and the actual document itself is a long-term maintenance plan. One of the ways that as we were designing this project, there are a number of areas that will be created that have overflow channels. And those areas will be the designated areas where, you know, every 2 or 3 years we will resurvey them and we'll see how much sediment has been deposited. And those will be the areas that we will target for deposition. And we are also pursuing permits from the Corps of Engineers for that.
To keep the channel at the
20 exactly.
Design
okay. Exactly.
That's what we wanted to hear. All right. Thank you.
Very good.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, colleagues, for comments. Thank you, staff, for your presentation. It's something that's very well needed in that area. You know, I represent that area. And the residents and the farmers in that area are very concerned about it. And luckily this year, for some, we didn't have enough rain, but for others, it's a major concern. But thank you for your work and what you're doing on that. We'll open it to public comment. I've got two requests to speak, Jeff Edwards and Eric Greening.
Thank you, Mr. Teixeira, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards. I've followed this project for the last couple of years. I often attend the Zone 1-1A meetings down in Oceano, and I don't have quite as glowing a report as the Public Works Department has on this project. First of all, I clearly respect the need to not only protect the urban development on the north side, but to design in protections for the agricultural interests on the south. However, by the way, AG Creek was not involved at all in the substantial flood of December 19th, 2010 in Oceano, where the island neighborhood was flooded, as was the sanitation district, and caused the release of several hundred thousand gallons of untreated sewage. But AG Creek wasn't involved in that. What is the situation now? Right now, if there's an overtopping, as you've heard, it occurs on the south and flows into the agricultural fields. But make no mistake about it, this project has been designed by and for the Public Works Department. You can see there's at least 7 Public Works folks here right now and a handful of audience members. The Public Works Department's going to get paid no matter what. And I will suggest to you that this project has largely been driven by grant availability. It's virtually 100% funded by other people's money. Now, that shouldn't make your decisions or your questions any less circumspect. You should be asking tough questions irrespective of whether it's grant money. And I don't know if you are fully aware of it, but right now you have about 10-year protection with the existing situation, and if you spend $9 million, you're going to only get 20-year protection. So what really is going on here? Well, there's a reason you can't raise the levees more than 1 foot or thereabouts, 1 to 2 feet, because there's a limitation with the bridge at 22nd Street. And so what do we have? We have simply cleaning out the creek, removing some vegetation, removing some sedimentation, excuse me, and we're going to call it a day. Well, let me suggest you could save almost the whole $9 million, less a little bit, by cleaning up the vegetation, the sedimentation in the creek, and then designing in a spillway that you can control the releases into the
natural habitat mitigation or for ultimate use as agriculture, perhaps even a rotating Choro Flats on a 100-year basis or something. I know I'm looking long-term here and grants are short-term, but that sediment is why that agricultural valley is there, and it is going to keep coming. It may come less during the lifetime of Lopez Reservoir, but another question. Are we in a gap between 2 incompleted HCPs? There's the one upstream. There's the state parks. As far as I know, neither is complete. Does that mean that any take that happens connected with this project, perhaps by then when they might be completed, will still be simply a take and enforced as a take? And to the extent that the HCPs may affect certainly the upstream one will affect the flow. We saw that during the resource management system findings. Is that being worked into the design of the project? Other moving pieces, is there still a chance that the UP might raise their railroad bridge? And how does that affect the hydrology? And if so, what would the timing of that be? Is State Parks still looking or studiedly not looking at any of this area in terms of the 25, 30-year late alternative access to the vehicle riding area, where they still gain access by splashing through a creek, something the Coastal Commission would not give a single occupant home a driveway doing that? Or are they only looking at the south end, or are they not looking anywhere at all? Have there been any discussions? Have there been any coordinations with some of these other moving pieces that will affect that watershed? So thank you for your efforts to date, and just some questions in recognition of other moving pieces and other timescales. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Bring it back for further comments from colleagues. Seeing none. The receive and file item. Thank you for your presentation.
Was there any answers to the questions?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I wasn't sure if I was to be.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I was to respond to all that. With respect to what kind of coordination has happened, we've worked with State Parks. One of the things that you can notice on the overall picture is that our project, as we went through design, the project targeted the areas that were the lowest in capacity, and it was determined through the modeling that from somewhere near the sanitation district towards the ocean, we had a lot more increased capacity. So we did not target our efforts in terms of the projects in that area. That area is part of the State Parks. They do know. They've been involved. They come to the Zone 11A meetings, so they definitely know what's going on as far as the waterway management program. In terms of the UP Railroad, in the waterway management program, our initial project is called Alternative 3C. And you'll note that today's project is called Modified 3C because the Alternative 3C is a much larger project, somewhere on the order of $16 to $17 million, because it does involve addressing the 22nd Street Bridge. It would also require addressing the UP Railroad. So it is still in our plan, and at some future date, after we complete this Alt 3A and Modified 3C, we will, that would still be on the radar. It's still part of the program. It's just it's such a large project that it's going to take some time to get the money necessary for that. But yes, that's all been considered. It's just it's such a large project that we haven't, it's not something we could pursue initially. And with respect to the HCP, perhaps Mark can talk specifically about that. But Eric also mentioned about are the releases that might happen as part of the HCP going to affect our design. Our design is related to storm events up on the order of 20-year, flooding. And the amount that we would be releasing for HCP is going to be during low flows. We're not going to be releasing flows when we're in a flooding situation. So we have noted it, but it's not something that's going to affect our design at this point.
Actually, I'll add two comments before Mr. Hutchinson comes up. With regards to Mr. Edwards' comments, he indicated that there was he projected a 10-year protection currently. That statement, unfortunately, is not correct. We currently have somewhere between a 2.8 and a 4-year storm protection because of the vegetation and the sediment within AG Creek. And then his additional comment with regards to a potential for a spillway design, that
really is on the lower end of the release schedule. Right now, the draft release program has releases maximizing at something like 40 cubic feet per second, whereas in the waterway management plan, they're in the thousands of cubic feet per second in the wet years and the overtopping years. So they're really opposite ends of the same scale. As far as take permitting that Eric Greening alluded to, the HCP itself is essentially a mitigation plan that's required as we seek take permits under what's called Section 10 of the Federal Endangered Species Act. The Waterway Management Plan, because of its funding and permitting, is classed as a federal action and has a completely different permitting process under Section 7, and that's part and parcel of what's going on here. So there'll be take authorization for all of the different kinds of activities that go along with both projects.
Questions from colleagues?
For Mr. Hutchinson, but for other staff, just two quick ones. First of all, I think it's useful if staff would confirm that whatever you're doing on this segment of the project is not precluding further improvements on this levee system. You talked about a better fix costing $16 million. Presumably, we're not cutting off a chance to do that by what we're doing here.
No. In fact, I should have probably characterized it as phase one is Alt 3A and the modified 3C. Phase two at some future date is Alt 3C, which would involve the railroad and the bridge to get 20-year plus protection everywhere.
Okay, so it's 20-year plus protection. That was my question was what's the highest level of protection that you have modeled for this? I mean, are we up anywhere close to a 100-year storm being contained in that levee system, or 50, or where?
Yes. Under the modified 3C project, the areas to the north levee actually are, some of them are at 100-year via the modeling, according to the model. When you add 2 feet of freeboard to the 20-year, let's say in the alternative 3C project, and we got 20-year protection plus 2 feet of freeboard, that puts us up somewhere around, I believe it's a 38-year storm before it would actually overtop. So,
I'll likely be gone by then, so that's fine.
So, yes, I'm hesitant to say that on the north levee, that we have 100-year plus, but I know that we were up between 50 and 100, even with the modified 3C that we're implementing soon. Yeah.
So just getting a mental picture. Thank you.
I'll just caveat that statement just real briefly in the fact that during that time, water is going over the south levee. So that's part of how we achieve that protection.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Certainly. That's item 27, a hearing to consider a resolution of necessity for the acquisition of real property interest required from Sandy Lee McLaughlin and Joan A. Chavez for the La Panza Road widening project, District 5.
And Phil, you better have some music.
Yeah, he better have one of those video diaries.
And you're falling behind. At least get us some color books or something.
On the road
at
70 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Give us a video diary. We're spoiled.
We apologize.
Good morning, Chairman Shara, and members of the board. Gennaro Diaz, project manager with the La Panza with Public Works Department. We're to go over the La Panza Road Winding Project and its resolution of necessity hearing for the property interest required for assessor's parcel number 043-251-010, Sandy McLaughlin and Juan Chavez. The safety project is located between Ryan Road and Horde Valley Road, east of Creston, between Highway 41 and Highway 58, McLaughlin and Chavez property being on the southern part of the project near the Horde Valley Road intersection. La Panza was built along the bottom of the valley, and it has a ditch on the west side that drains north towards Ryan Road. Again, this area is relatively flat. Bit of a project description. The project improvements are on La Panza Road between Ryan Road and Horde Valley Road. This project will be winding the roadway by adding 4-foot paved shoulders on both each side of the road. The center line does not change. It will also flatten the west side of the slope, and in doing so, it will relocate the existing ditch away from the road and also reconstruct driveway approaches and culverts due to this realignment of the ditch. This is a picture looking north on La Panza towards Ryan. It's 1.4. A bit about funding. This project successfully competed and was awarded federal funds based on a purpose and needs provided to you with this presentation, the collision rates. MAP 21 has specific performance measures established for safety projects, and county's inability to deliver the project and meet required schedule will result in barring the county from future HSIP grant applications. Some actions to date. June of 2009, your board adopted a resolution designating Prop 1B funds for this project. And in spring of 2011, Caltrans approved the county's application for Federal Highway Administration, FHWA, Highway Safety Improvement Program, HSIP, funds. In June of 2012, your board unanimously adopted findings required by CEQA and approved the mitigative negative declaration for the project. In January 8th of this year, public work project representatives, which included myself and Phil and others, met with the impacted property owners, of which 8 out of the 12 impacted property owners attended. I'm going to hand this over to our right-of-way agent, Phil Acosta.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Phil Acosta, right-of-way agent for Department of Public Works. We do have key elements for consideration for a resolution of necessity. Four essential elements. Let's see, the public interest and necessity require the proposed project. Number two, the project is planned or located in the manner compatible with the greatest public good and least private injury. These are items that Gennaro's portion of the presentation are addressing. And then also that the subject property is necessary for the public project. And the part that I'll be addressing here, the offer required under Government Code 7267.2 has been made to the property owners. Just a bit about our right-of-way status again. The county must certify possession of the required properties in August of 2013. 7 of 12 owners now have executed right-of-way documents. The subject property has not sufficiently progressed toward the right of possession required for the project, and that is why we're here today. Also wanted to note here that we previously requested your adoption and received adoption of 3 resolutions of necessity. And if you're doing your math, there's one more parcel that's teeter-tottering on promising negotiations, but we are scheduling a follow-up hearing nevertheless in the event that things don't go as we plan. So that accounts for our 12 parcels. The resolution of necessity represents a tool or gateway for the county and the owner to elevate due process to the next level when settlement or agreement for possession is not apparent. These negotiations remain open as to possession of the property and just compensation with the property owners as we move forward. The property owners have not provided a written indication of their intention to appear and contest the requested resolution, and as I look at the audience here, we do not see the property owners or a representative here today. This is an aerial view of the subject property. Sandy McLaughlin and Joanne Chavez are the owners, 4375 La Ponza Road. The property contains 15 acres, and it's very efficiently improved with residential and agricultural improvements. They do have a roping arena and do roping-related classes and growth feed for their animals and that sort of thing. So the use is rural residential and agriculture. The project requires roughly half an acre, and it is 1,708 feet long. It's basically the entire frontage of the property with La Ponza Road and averages about 11.5 feet wide. The county staff completed an appraisal on January 9th, 2013, and our offer was made February 8th of 2013. Negotiations have progressed, and they've been very promising at times, but we do have some differences currently, and that's why we're requesting this resolution to be adopted. So we'd like to recommend that we open and conduct the hearing today. Receive comments from the staff, accept any testimony from the property owner or their representative, and consider all the evidence regarding the 4 key elements that we discussed, and then adopt by 4/5 vote the resolution of necessity for the interest required from Sandy McLaughlin and Joanne Chavez.
Thank you, Mr. Acosta. Questions from colleagues? Mr. Meacham?
I mean, I'll defer to the district supervisor first if you want to. I want to just jump back a moment, if we could, please, to understand the impetus behind repairing this roadway. Was this generated through, like, Highway Patrol or whatever due to the number of accidents?
Janar and Phil have done a great job, and nothing I'm going to say to my colleagues here, it's nothing I haven't said to them already. The project is a great project, a safety project that will benefit not only the folks traveling through, but the people that live on the road. And the difficulty I'm having is that the process for the county began back in June 2009. We just saw on Gennaro's slide, applied for more funds, received funds in 2011. In June 2012, there were more hearings. But you saw on the slide that the public hearing for the neighbors and the property owners notification came along in January of 2013. So now we're looking at properties. Somewhere close to half of the property owners out of the 12 have had a real difficult time with this, and some have kind of come forward on their own. But in this particular rural property, one half acre out of 15 acres. And I think where I'm having sensitivity is these are rural properties. A lot of the improvements that are made, in this case in a roping arena, but these are improvements that came, you know, it was blood, sweat, and tears, saved money, time, where people are creating these properties for their particular use, but there's been, again, time and kind of customization of these properties for their benefit, their dreams, their property. It's been, what, 3 or so months now since they had the public hearing and understood that the county needed their property. I think most of them understand the importance of the safety project, and we certainly don't want to lose that federal funding. It's just my hope that in the future, that when the county takes up these projects, I know we don't always know we're going to receive the funds, but at least 4 years ago, if we'd had that public meeting back then and said, all right, everybody, in 4 years there's a possibility that we're going to be having to, you know, encroach in on your property, I think 4 years would have made a big difference. Mm-hmm. Maybe it would have avoided some. I know it would have avoided some of improvements that have been made to some of the other properties. I don't know in this case. But still, people would have had some years to kind of adjust to the fact that, well, we won't use that part of the property, or we'll get used to the fact that might not be our property in 4 years. Those kinds of things. So again, it's not my intent at all to jeopardize the funding, because this is an important safety project. But I do have a worry about our resolution of necessity, which has moved in some of the other cases into just a taking of the property. So that's my spiel. Thank you.
Okay. And I have one question, gentlemen. Going back to the slide where it showed the McLaughlin-Chavez property, and it shows 11.5 feet or so going across the front of it, will there be any part of the drainage swale or drainage ditch or any of that within their property? Will it be fenced back over that, or is that all going to be in the easement?
Correct. Thank you for your question. Phil Acosta, right-of-way agent, Department of Public Works. The new ditch will be within the property being acquired for the project. And so the property owners will be able to relocate their fence back to the new right-of-way line. So the ditch will be entirely within county right-of-way, and it'll be ours to maintain, other than the driveway encroachments and related culverts. We are going to be reconstructing those at the project expense, but they will become encroachments owned by the owners once we're done with them.
So in that 11.5-foot wide strip of land, you're going to add a 4-foot shoulder and sufficient area for a drainage swale that you're not going to put next to the road?
Yes, except I would like to note that the existing right-of-way for La Ponza Road is 60 feet wide, so we do have some existing room for additional improvements, okay. The additional shoulder, adding then the 12 feet to one side, okay. Gives us a lot more room to work with.
Got it. Thank you very much. Further questions? Mr. Meacham.
You just mentioned, Phil, that the fence is going to move back. Do they have to reconstruct that, or do the
project?
Thank you for your question. That will be at project expense. Whether we do it with our construction contractor or some of the property owners have asked for the funds up front so they can do that on their own schedule. Gotcha. Either way, it'll be at county expense.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll go to property owners and or representatives. Seeing none, we'll close that portion of the hearing. Board members, have further comments? Open the floor to public comment. No public. Close public comment. Further comments or a motion from the board?
I'll move staff's recommendation.
Second.
And I would, under discussion, if I might, Mr. Chairman, comment that this resolution of necessity is absolutely consistent with continuing negotiations. So I don't see that there's any particular impingement here, and it is fundamentally important to keep these funds intact, and we're going to need to pass this resolution today to keep this project an important safety improvement on track.
Great. Yeah, I would echo that in saying that there's definitely nothing more important that we do here than protect public safety and health, and this is a project that will do that.
I couldn't agree with either you gentlemen more, but I do think that we need to refine the process a little better, so we'll go from there. Okay. Madam Clerk, we'll call vote.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Ms. Arnold.
As I have in the past, I'll be voting no on this one.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes. Okay. Next on the agenda is closed session and public comment on closed session. Seeing none, we'll close public comment. Ms. Neal, approximate time?
Yes, Rita Neal, County Council, approximately 45 minutes today.
Okay, very good. Thank you. We'll be back here about 12:30 for report out of closed session.